Welcome to Movie Richard's Movie Month, where the Atlantic Voice Network's very own in-house critic, Movie Richard, looks at what's out and about to be out at your local multiplex. I'm Zeph, and here now, the man at the concession stand, Movie Richard. The man in the lobby, Movie Richard, is here for December.
I'm back.
Holiday greetings, I guess.
Absolutely. One month away from being 29. I'm getting old. I feel the physical changes. Happy holidays. Ready to go back to North Carolina and celebrate Christmas real
Dude,
soon.
Dude, does the phrase double your age mean anything to you?
Not at all.
Because the guy sitting over here at this microphone.
Yes, sir.
Is unfortunately tagged with double your age. And that's just an approximate number.
Yes, sir.
Because I'm not giving it away. Well,
yes, sir.
An approximate number.
The English, you guys age well. Here in America, we go differently. So I'm trying to appreciate what I have. It's a nice way to say
dear.
That. Yes, sir.
We have a packed show this month. We're going to climax with some Star Wars talk, which I know you are passionate about.
Yes, sir.
With the new Star Wars talk film on the horizon, there's no chance of any spoilers. So we're not going to give anything away, but I am, in sort of a play on spoilers, I'm going to ask you to make some predictions about how Star Wars finishes
Absolutely.
Up. We're also going to talk some Irishman.
Absolutely. Great.
And some other streaming stuff, but we're going to start with something that was in a cinema that we both saw, and because we're both guys that like sports, it was both a movie that we both went to see when it was fresh.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair to say. Ford versus Ferrari. If you haven't seen it, Christian Bale, Matt Damon playing real-life motor racer Ken Miles. Christian Bale plays Ken Miles, who is a real-life British motor racing driver of the 60s. And then Matt Damon plays Carroll Shelby, who is a famous name in car construction.
Yes,
he was also a racer himself in sort of a... I don't know, what do you call these things, Richard, where they're sort of inspired by history, but they're not documentary?
Yeah, that's literally the phrase that they use. Inspired
yes.
by history or loosely based off of blank. But this one felt... Because I had to do a little bit of research before I went, it felt pretty accurate to me.
Yeah, so they're telling the true story of the 1966 Le Mans race. And again, Richard is looking at me like, Zeph, educate the audience, but don't get too lost. Because I love motor racing of all forms. Le Mans is a 24-hour race where they race cars that, they don't look like stock cars. They definitely don't look like Indy cars or Formula One cars. They do look, they are related to something where you think, yeah, I can drive that.
Yeah, yes, sir.
And anyway, the cars race for 24 hours. And anyway, back in the 60s, Ferrari, and everyone has heard the name Ferrari,
Absolutely.
Dominated that race. And at the time, that race was the Kentucky Derby,
mm-hmm.
the Super Bowl of motor racing. That was the one to win. Along with the Daytona 500. I think you're correct there.
Down south, kid.
There you go. And anyway, Ford had wanted to, basically, for reasons that the movie kind of gets into, and are quite accurate, Ford decided that the Ford Motor Company decided we're going to beat Ferrari in the biggest race of its time. And this story tells the story of a couple of gentlemen who Ford had to bring in to help make that happen for them. It is a sports movie.
Absolutely.
But I think it went beyond being a sports movie.
Absolutely.
You've got Damon and Bale, two of Hollywood's leading lights, playing a duo.
Mm-hmm.
And we love the duo of DiCaprio and Pitt.
Absolutely.
Early this
and
year.
I love this one as well.
Yeah, and we talked about how DiCaprio and Pitt had this great sort of
chemistry.
Bale and Damon had the same thing.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to stake out where I am on this movie.
Mm-hmm.
As a guy who likes the sport and is knowledgeable of the sport, the movie was relatively accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get too deep into it, I'm going to sort of give some half spoilers here. Most of the big dramatic moments in the movie are true.
Wow.
And before I say this, I want to give a shout out before I then ask Richard what he felt of the film. If you see this movie and you liked it, if you kind of have a passing interest in motor racing and you want to learn more, there is this great documentary you can find on Netflix called The 24-Hour War.
Mm-hmm.
And that was made about 4 years ago, and it was made by Adam Carolla.
Okay.
The podcast is Adam Carolla.
Absolutely.
Richard is always very, and I'm doing a lot of talking at the start of the show, but I'm going to turn it over to my partner in a moment. Richard is also, is always very competitive with Joe Rogan, who has the number one podcast in the world.
Absolutely.
But Adam Carolla, he has a very successful podcast.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Anyway, Adam Carolla had along with another gentleman, had directed and produced this great documentary, which actually tells the true story of Ford versus Ferrari.
I'll definitely watch that.
As a guy who I'm guessing has only a passing interest with motorsport,
yes.
How did this movie play for you, just as a 2.5 experience as a movie?
Well, it's interesting because, like the Le Mans race that you were previously referencing, that was introduced to me, I believe, through a PlayStation video game back in 1996. Didn't even know it was a real, actual event. Most of the motorsport racing before I moved to North Carolina was introduced to me literally through video games. Everyone between the ages of, I would say, 15 out of 40 knows Gran Turismo, huge game. Tried to make a movie, glad they didn't. That was my introduction to anything beyond your traditional Need for Speed, which is another game that became a movie. And if you were to make a very quick comparison.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a video game.
Yeah, yeah. It was a much better game than it was a movie.
That's the Nick Cage car movie, right? Or not Gone in 60 Seconds, which is another Nick Cage car movie.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right. And it's funny because to make a really quick comparison, Gran Turismo would be closer to what we're discussing right now with this film, Ford versus Ferrari. Need for Speed would be more Fast and Furious. Just everything's over the top, Nitro, et cetera. So from that point forward, just really quickly in my life, moving down south, the biggest thing we deal with is NASCAR, no doubt about it. I live within an hour of, I think, two different tracks.
Yes.
We have motor speedways, but drag racing, completely different. I've always been interested with how racing is handled in Europe, just really not knowing where to go, where to watch, or even where the events are. I'm fairly familiar with names like in Formula One,
sure,
but that's about as far as it goes. So when I saw the title for the movie, I was caught on the title immediately because in my head, when, as you know, everyone knows what a Ferrari is. And down south growing up in North Carolina, Chevy versus Ford was one of the biggest discussions for almost half of my life. So when I just read the title before even seeing the trailer and I saw the cast that was going to be involved, I'm like, Ford versus Ferrari, what is this? Now, after seeing the movie and having a little bit of a better understanding of the historical significance of what was taking place and learning all of that story on the fly in the film, I'll be honest with you, I really enjoyed it. To me, that was like one of the better educational / informative films on a historical event of my lifetime. I really was fascinated with the sound, the way the racing was handled. The special effects or lack thereof were incredible. I thought the primary
I'm going to ask you about that in a moment.
We're going to get back to
that. Now, yeah.
But it was new. It was very new because, once again, when you speak about this type of car movie, almost every other car movie of my generation at any level, automotive movie, a little ridiculous.
They are.
Little ridiculous.
We've touched on this before when we've discussed the Fast and the Furious.
A little outlandish. I don't know. I can't even think of one right now, unless you want to use Gone in 60 Seconds, where I'm like, that was a fairly realistic car movie at any level.
Just not a very a big car, but characters that you didn't really buy into.
Exactly. You know, I've grown up, for better or worse, we've grown up with Fast and Furious, where guys are driving all types of vehicles past tanks. So it was really refreshing and relieving to kind of see a realistic automotive film that dives into the sport realistically, authentically, historically, as informative as it was entertaining. It was really cool for me.
It was entertaining, wasn't it? And I found this by going through YouTube and just watching stuff on YouTube, that apparently, while movies might have been released, Matt Damon's father passed away a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And Damon hadn't done a movie in over a year. Mm-hmm. He just hadn't worked. And then when he was asked to be in this one, he was like, yeah, this seems as good a movie as any to start, you know, come back to work regular again. Now, sure, movie stars can afford to take a year and a half off work. And he said one of the things that attracted him to it was, yeah, it was like, you know, a car movie and as his action, but he was really attracted by the notion of the relationship between he and his lead co-star is Christian Bale, but Josh Lucas is sort of the closest thing the movie has to a villain who he plays his executive.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting, and I think I said this to you the other day. I think Christian Bale, in classic Christian Bale fashion, has the showier part, meaning, you know, he's obviously doing a full-on regional accent from the UK. He lost a lot of weight to play the guy, he said himself. And I saw another interview where he said, yeah, I'm done losing weight for roles now. Yeah. And Matt Damon was with him and laughed and said, yeah, when you get a call on your set from your cardiologist, you know it's time to just
let
your weight.
Absolutely.
You know, and he was playing this slightly eccentric character.
Big personality.
But Matt Damon, who I think has always been underrated as an actor, because he just sort of has presence and he's just there. And what I mean by that is, I can't remember, and this is not a fair comparison, but Tom Cruise and maybe to an extent Leo DiCaprio tend to be quite showy within their roles. And I don't mean that as a criticism.
Yeah, it's just the truth.
Whereas Damon's more like Brad Pitt, and I immediately think about Astro, the movie we talked about last week, where Damon just stands there and you sort of look at him and it's all...
It's Matt Damon.
Yeah, but you also have to... He does this great job of giving away what's underneath without waving his arms and putting on a voice. I felt that the Damon character had most of the best scenes.
Absolutely. Subtle and effective.
Actors, But the two of them had really good chemistry, didn't they?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I hope that just from an acting perspective that they, in the future, get to work together again.
Good chemistry, didn't they?
It was great chemistry. They did. And in the same fashion as what we spoke about in our previous most watched show with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the chemistry was different. It was cool how there was a lot of chemistry and it was clear. But like you said, it wasn't like both guys are being showy or you ever got a sense that someone's trying to out-act another person, which led to a powerful performance. It was like two people being themselves to a certain extent and working within the framework of the film, and it just worked.
I remember when I came out of the movie, I was talking to different people. I was talking to my other half, and I'd gone on my own. Because I'm like, ooh, it's a car movie. And I want to circle around to that discussion before we move on to the rest of our show. But when I came out, I'm on the phone with her and she's like, what was it like? And I go, you know, you'd really like it. Because it's a, it's about cars, but ultimately it's about two dudes.
Absolutely.
And I remember the time I said, this is not a fair comparison, but it was like, it was almost like, and I'm not going to reference a movie from before your time, even almost before my time, but the most famous of, like, the first famous two stars double act was Butch and Sundance, which was Paul Newman
Dad
and Robert Redford together. And you watch that movie, and it's like, yeah, these two dudes like hanging out.
Yeah.
And this film had that, you could believe, in the same way that Pitt and DiCaprio.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just want to hang out with those guys. Yeah. It was an interesting thing.
Yeah.
So, that being said, I remember when the first time, my mother is not a huge fan of sports. She likes soccer. She takes an interest in Arsenal Football Club very much because that's her son's team.
Absolutely.
We're doing terribly right now. And yes, we're in a relegation battle. I made her watch Moneyball. And I remember that on TV, she was visiting and we had it on cable. And the movie started and I said, Mom, it's about baseball, but don't worry. And she loved Moneyball because it was Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill. And and it's just these two dudes. And it just so happens to be that it's about sport.
Absolutely.
And about a baseball team.
Absolutely.
I felt there started to become a moment very early with this film when I'm like, ooh, this is the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't have to like motor racing.
Yeah.
Now, there is a lot of motor racing in it, especially the back half of the movie.
Powerful.
But the first hour, you don't. It's about guys. And I think that's what made it work as a film.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question then, because I think this is the more interesting debate. I'm of the understanding from research that the director, a guy called James Mangold, who made Logan, the Wolverine.
Yes.
I think he also did Walk the Line. He worked before with Matt Damon in the 310 to Yuma. Not Matt Damon, Christian Bale.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite movies from the 90s, Copland.
That's a good one.
Resume. He said himself that they tried to cut down. They used a lot of special effects for like backgrounds.
Yeah.
But all the car stuff, except obviously when you have a star in close-up.
Yeah.
When you saw all the race scenes,
it's
like, no, we were going to crash the cars for real and we were going to drive the cars for real. And they got a lot of NASCAR guys and sons of drivers to come in and drive the cars. So now, as two guys now who like car movies, did it hang together as a car movie knowing that the comparison is Fast and Furious? Do you think there are young people who are going to go to this and go,
That's
I guess it had Batman in. I guess it had Bourne in it.
Yeah.
But they're going to be underwhelmed by the car stuff.
You know, I think that...
As you said yourself.
Yeah, we've grown up on...
On video games.
Video games and video game-like CGI-heavy Fast and Furious, which at this point is a fantasy car movie at best. You know, I would say this. I think from people...
Did you find the action underwhelming?
I didn't.
Not bad. Underwhelming.
No, I didn't. I was actually pleasantly surprised because I was curious to see how this was going to be handled because I was assuming that it wasn't going to be car heavy and that the entire basis of what was going to make the film entertaining was the action in the racing. But I was wondering, and you referenced that first hour, before I went into the film, I was wondering, is the buildup going to be slow? And then after the buildup, are the car scenes going to be horrible? I feel like anybody, and I'm still going to go like 21 and up, because I just think under 21 is just too accustomed to Fast and Furious.
Yep.
And wouldn't be able to make it through that first hour because they just have a different perspective on how car movies start.
Right.
Because the Fast and Furious, it starts in the first 5 minutes.
You're right.
Shooting a rocket and et cetera. No knock, billion-dollar films. I think that anyone 21 and up who came in openly and loves vehicles could appreciate not only what this film offers between two grown men having this one guy, Matt Damon, being real type A, trying to get these results, Christian Bale kind of going rogue, kind of having that that personality of any mechanic down south and nationally. I think they would appreciate that, and I thought the car scenes were great. I really did. I thought they were extreme. Now that you say that, and I didn't know if they were using special effects or not, now that I look back and think about it again, it makes sense that a lot of it wasn't green screen. It felt different. The car scenes to me felt different. The sound was incredible.
Sound was great.
And I remember thinking at one point, like, if they use special effects on this, like, they're on to something. Because this feels comparable to, like, a Dunkirk war movie with the quality of sound over the course of the race, which is rare in a car film.
Yes.
Not just loud engines and cool turns. Felt like you could even hear the tire on the gravel when they took off. Every part of what truly makes a powerful engine and a powerful car appealing, I feel like you could really take that away from this film and experience it. So I think most people who give it an honest chance and are not coming in with that direct comparison to Fast and Furious would enjoy it. I thought the car scenes were great and authentic and not kind of over the top.
Not a sports movie in the traditional sense, not a car movie in the traditional sense. So I think it's fair to say we would both highly recommend it.
I really would. I would definitely put it in my top 10, top 15.
I've seen more movies this year than others, and it's interesting. As someone who loves motor racing, that may have been the reason I went to see it.
Yeah.
But if someone said to me, I have no problem selling this movie to people who aren't interested, because again, this is not the first time this year that you've got two leads carrying the water equally and making it work, but then a whole load. Mm-hmm. I thought the young, the female lead, who apparently is in a TV show, because we are going to switch to TV shortly, or streaming TV. She's in something called Outlander. Was excellent.
Yeah, she
and
was.
All these, I said Josh Lucas is in it, who's terrific.
The cast was great.
The cast was
everyone
great.
Performed.
It was very well done.
Yeah, and if you were to, hypothetically, if you were to ignore that for the first hour and just wait for the car scenes, I think most people from that perspective would still say good film.
I'll go to payoff.
Yeah.
I'll go payoff at the end.
Yeah. I would highly recommend it, especially to anyone who comes from a strong automotive culture like we have down south. Very different, but that would really appreciate how they handle the racing scenes.
And if you don't, ride along anyway, because you're not going to be disappointed in your two leads. Really good performances from both of those. So that's Fast and Furious. We both liked it.
Yeah.
Let us now move on. We were going to talk about The Irishman that we've both seen, which has so much conversation. But before that, because Irishman has been in the cinema, but primarily is being delivered via Netflix, we did have a conversation on the last show a little bit about streaming TV, but you've been watching some things on
Apple. Well, you know, we lightly went over it and just have a quick refresher. We're now in the day of multiple streaming services. Netflix is kind of using The Irishman, which we're about to discuss, as one of their last ditch efforts to try to maintain the relevancy, because in the last year, Disney Plus just launched. Apple Plus, which I didn't even know about till the last show almost just launched. You still have Netflix, and then you still have all the other ones that were kind of around. Hulu, Amazon, YouTube TV, if you want per se. So I really was excited because before our last show, it was right before the launch of Disney Plus, which we're going to speak about one of its primary shows in a second, and also Apple Plus, which I saw a commercial maybe a day before the show.
Okay.
Two shows I'm going to touch on really quickly. I'm going to start with the newest one by M. Night Shyamalan, Servant.
I've heard about this.
It is so ridiculously interesting and intriguing that it kills me that the episodes are only 30 minutes.
Really?
Like, it is making me sick to my stomach that I can't binge watch it because they released the first three episodes and the fourth one comes out on Friday, this past Friday.
Uh-huh.
That's only two total hours. And I'm so invested in this story right now. I'm just going to give a really light premise because I want people to really check this out.
Yeah, because I've heard that he's in a project.
All
I can give some stars, gives a bit of setup.
You have a family who's lost a child, and the mother, it was very tough for her that she lost a child, so she has gotten one of those very lifelike dolls, baby dolls, if per se, to kind of help her through the trauma of what took place. They got a nanny. A new young nanny for this doll, and next thing you know, a actual baby shows up. The nanny, who's 20 years old, seemed to be a nice person. We're beginning to find out she has a very interesting past, and that's where I'm going to leave it. But everything you would expect from vintage, prime M. Night Shyamalan is there. The use of suspense, the drama, when you think you're on to something, you find out it's nothing.
Is it suspense or is this horror?
Suspense.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify because sometimes.
I think that's a great question because if you watch the trailer, you may think horror and stuff's going to be popping up. It's really, I would say, suspense / drama.
What's his involvement? Because obviously he's the name, M. Night Shyamalan. Is he sort of the producer, the writer?
Producer is my understanding, and my understanding is writer. Don't
creator.
Quote creator.
Okay.
I put it all together.
So it's his premise.
And it's, I'm telling you, it's one of those shows where you go, okay, what is this? You get into it, you watch the first two episodes, which is just an hour total between the two. You're like, okay, they're putting something together here. Because there are a lot of things that create uncertainty in the audience.
Because I do want to touch on something that I watched on Amazon Prime nearly a year ago, and they were short episodes. Does the apparently, too, I'm of the understanding that Mandalorian is not an hour. It's somewhere between 30 and 45
minutes.
Yeah,
it's in there. Yeah.
You said, ooh, I wish they weren't 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, is that you wished that it was longer because it's so good? Or do you feel like it's a creative mistake? Like, no, take a bit more time.
It's just so good.
Okay.
It's just so good. And I know that with Apple, I think they're saying they're capping all of their shows at 10 episodes. So 10 episodes per season, that's 5 total hours. This feels like the show that should be an hour per episode because it's ridiculously good. And it seems like there's a lot to be told. And then I want to quickly segue from that to the morning show because clearly it is about a Good Morning America type show. Jennifer Aniston,
Steve Carell.
Steve Carell are the two leads.
And of course, Reese Witherspoon,
who
and Aniston are executive
just
producers.
On fire right now on television in terms of to come from Big Little Lies, which should have definitely, Complex, I'm upset with you guys, should have definitely been a top 5 show of this year to this. Just on fire, acting at a high level performances. I'm a Jennifer Aniston fan for a variety of reasons. I would still say this is her best actual acting of her career. A lot of depth, a lot of versatility, very relatable.
She's an underrated actress, isn't she?
I think so. And I think this is going to wake a lot of people up to there's more to her than just friends and physical attributes. She's really an artist, and she just.
And to be fair, she's not always picked the greatest of.
I would say that's.
I think that's.
Yeah, to me, that's the knock. It's not her ability. It's just picking.
Yeah, and I'm not
like Jennifer Lopez,
booty,
different caliber, but just picking a lot of wild movies in the fact.
Well, and J Lo is apparently who's terrific in Hustlers, which I know is in a movie.
Incredible film.
But I mean, J Lo is someone who you go, oh no, she's got talent.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
We just picked a lot of weird films. But I wanted to touch on Steve Carell before I get into a light synopsis. As much range as I've seen from him, still funny.
Because is this Obviously, the M. Night Shyamalan, we've said, yeah, it's suspense forward, yeah. sort of a thriller type, eerie, what yeah. have you. Is the breakfast, sorry, the morning show.
Yes.
Is it a comedy? Is it a drama? You know, is it a dramedy?
I think it's a dramedy.
How would you classify
it? Yeah, I think dramedy is perfect because it has a unique balance of comedy and drama, and it really also balances serious social issues that are taking place right now, and they're actually covering some of the things that have taken place
right.
in the last year
yep.
with a comedic lens as well. They somehow have managed to really have that pendulum swing perfectly where you're in a serious moment and it's intense and all the acting is spot on and they have to respond to the California forest fire, et cetera, et cetera. You know, then the next scene at a bar, C. Carell is The Office.
Okay.
And I just want to give one line out about what makes his performance so intriguing and what makes the show so interesting. He and Jennifer Aniston are on the top morning show in the world. She's on the way out because of her ratings, and he has a Me Too situation.
Okay.
And that's all I can see. You just have to see it for yourself.
A couple of questions about it. Are the episodes... Can you binge watch it, or is this another once a week situation?
Yeah, it's once a week, and I have to give Apple Plus credit because what they did, which allowed people like me who didn't do all the reading on the app, they for most of their shows they put out the first three episodes first. So a lot of us thought that it was going to be releasing it three episodes at a time, but after they released the first three episodes for everything, like even C with Jason Momoa. Which is another show. Then it becomes a weekly release.
Half hour, 1 hour?
Morning show hour. Great all the way through. Not
let,
a waste of
so
minute.
Let me ask you a question now on this. And because we are going to talk a bit more about another streaming thing a little bit later. Before we get into Star Wars, because they are related.
Yeah.
Obviously, streaming services, and that's the catch-all I'm going to, even though these things are now available on your cable package, these streaming services, for want of a better phrase, all arrived with the notion that you could binge-watch things, in that the schedule was entirely in your control as a viewer. Do you think that now, if there are now more and more shows that are getting away from that, is that a good or a bad thing?
I think it's a mistake. Because that's the appeal to me of
that's
streaming.
That's the draw, right? I'm in charge.
And if I'm Netflix with whatever I produce moving forward, like the Witcher is the next huge, supposed to compete with Game of Thrones.
Because all that stuff, they drop it and
it's
down
all
to
out. I like to have the choice. There are people I know who, when it's all released, they go by week by their choice. And if they have a down week at work and they want to binge watch it, they can. You get a snow day and something released on Sunday, you're not going anywhere, especially in this area, because nobody can drive here. You can binge watch. It's something to be said about when you get used to streaming, binge watching to, oh, when's the next episode? Oh, I have to wait a week.
This becomes like regular TV again.
Yeah, like that's not what I'm paying for. That's what cable's for.
And it's interesting. I don't know. I think I've told you this
and
story
no 30
before.
Minute shows.
Yeah. And I'll come back to that in a moment, too. I never used to pay for HBO.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I watched The Sopranos in one summer when Netflix used to send you the DVDs.
Yeah.
It was great. I could watch 3, 4, 5 episodes a week, watch the whole series in one summer. The Wire,
Ooh,
which I did not watch until I had it on Amazon Prime. Yeah. I binged watched 5 years of The Wire. Yeah. One during a snowcopalypse, 4 days out of work, and then the rest of it over the preceding next 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And in a strange way, while I regret not getting those shows first time around when everyone else was watching them and talking about them, I love the fact that my first exposure, I could gobble down as much Wire as I wanted to and then push away from the table. And I find it interesting that these companies are now, they've got away from that. That's an appeal, isn't it?
And I wanted to make one quick comparison because I've left one streaming service out, CBS All Access. I literally got it because the new Twilight Zone is on it, which I thought was being released 2020. It came out this past January, produced by Jordan Peele. What I loved about it was exactly what you said. It was released 5 months ago. I immediately fell in love with it. New Twilight Zone, CBS All Access. I could watch the entire thing. 10 episodes, I watched them all in like 4 days. I don't like this idea of...
It's a mistake, isn't it?
Yeah, I do. And
I think it's a mistake.
I think it's a huge mistake. And I think they're doing it because... I think their fear is... Because
there's no creative reason for doing it.
No, it can be. I think what they're doing, 7-day trial, if we allow you to binge watch it, why would you allow us to direct deposit? And I still think it's a mistake.
Do you think it's because... Here's the thing. Yeah. It's because they're not confident enough in the rest of their stuff or having the rest of their stuff ready to... You're right. People will trial it and get in and get out.
Yeah.
But yeah, in a strange way, to give Netflix its credit... Netflix always had, it came to this a different way, but it's always had a larger inventory where you go, no, people are going to stay home. Yeah. But I do want to ask you, shelve that thought when we come back to talk about The Mandalorian, because Disney actually have inventory.
They do.
The 30-minute thing. Yeah. I remember watching the Julia Roberts show Homecoming on Amazon.Prime, and they were only 30-minute episodes. Mm-hmm. But I remember I was able to binge watch that, and it didn't bother me. Mm-hmm. And the 30 minutes just seemed to work. Mm-hmm. When it was finished, I'm like, oh, is that it? I really want more. But then it was like next episode in 5 seconds, and then I had more. Mm-hmm. So I find it interesting. If you're giving everyone everything at once, then just tell your story, whether it takes 30 minutes or an hour.
I agree with that.
But if you're not giving everyone at once, 30 minutes, then these suddenly becomes more interesting things.
30 minutes for a week is just not getting it done.
No, you're going to lose interest. You're not going to come back.
Yeah.
Whereas 30 minutes, okay, we're going to release an episode every other day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I can live with that.
Okay. Yeah. So let's veer away, sort of staying within this vein. Mm-hmm. The Irishman, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Ray Romano, Al Pacino.
Al Pacino,
Anna Paquin, Harvey Keitel, an English actor, Stephen Graham, who's brilliant, is in it. All kinds of people. 3 hours, 45 minutes. Martin Scorsese, a lot of hype.
Yeah, lived up to it. I've said consistently from our first show to now, I love gangster films. And even though I think I've allowed my bias to make me think some gangster films a little bit better than they are, Gangster Squad, for example, I loved it. It got like a 20.
Who's in that one? Is that the one with Josh Brolin as the cop?
Yes.
And Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling is the cop. Somebody's the cop.
He's one of them's the cop.
Guys in hats and cops. And
Sean
Penn.
Sean Penn.
Sean Penn.
I watched that former boxer.
Hey, look. Movie I watched with my dad. And I'm like, why are we watching this? Yeah. And I watched that. I go, yeah, that's not bad.
Hey, not bad. But if you ask me, it's like incredible. But this Irishman film, because the only truly incredible gangster film of my generation, I would say, would be American Gangster, because they took the time and went about it the right way. This to me is just an excellent film. I just really enjoyed it. I didn't get a lot of access to all of the people you named, excluding Panic Queen, because she's in one of the shows I watched, The Affair, which is an hour long. But De Niro, Pesci, Pacino, like I was talking to my dad about this. I know Robert De Niro from like his corny shows and like the movies in like the last 7 years.
Meet
like,
the Parents.
Meet the Parents.
And, meet the Falkers.
The Accountant. Meet the Falkers.
The Accountant.
you know, the one he did, the Dirty Grandpa. Like that's who I know him as. So I miss that. Pesci is just a guy I hear old people speak about who.
It's true. He hasn't worked a lot. Guy's won an Oscar.
Yeah, absolutely. Pacino, once again. And hip-hop culture is a god, but what Pacino films have I seen? You know what they are. So it was a great opportunity for me to finally get to see all of these people. With
have you seen Heat?
Yes, but that's forever. Okay. But forever ago. So I was probably 16.
Have you ever seen The Insider?
No.
I would suggest you watch that. That was by the same Michael Mann directed Heat, and then he directed Pacino a couple of years later in The Insider with Russell Crowe in it. It's about... journalists and good movie. I think you'd really like it.
I'll definitely check that out, The Insider. But I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed all of what it was. Like I said, getting to see those actors with the age. We're going to come back to that. That special effect, that was interesting.
So let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let me give you a question.
Yeah.
All-star cast.
Yeah.
Who's the MVP? Everyone's asking this, and everyone's got a slightly different opinion. Who's the MVP? You've got Robert De Niro playing a character called Edward Sheeran, who apparently had written a book where he claimed, or a journalist had written a book where he claimed he'd spoke to this guy who claimed to be an old school Philadelphia mafioso guy.
Yeah.
Al Pacino plays Jimmy Hoffa, who is a real person.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci plays someone else who history has was a big Philadelphia mafioso.
I'm going to go...
Who is your MVP?
I can only pick one.
Sure, yeah, you got to. This is a star-studded cast. If you just say everyone, now that's a star-studded cast.
No, there are two that come to mind, but I'm going to...
It's like if you say to me, who's the MVP of... What's the Scorsese movie with DiCaprio and Damon?
What the...
set in Boston. It's based on the Chinese thriller, Internal Affairs. It's the Departed.
Departed. Yeah, The Departed.
If you say to me,
Leonardo who's the MVP? DiCaprio.
No, my answer? Marky Mark is the MVP.
I can take that. I can
or
take
maybe
that.
Maybe Alec
take
Baldwin.
I
those other guys
that.
Are great.
I can take that.
But
I can
it's star-studded.
I can live
Marky
with that.
Marky Mark, the MVP. Who's the MVP?
Well,
of this
since
movie?
You gave me that answer in that perspective, I'm going to say for the MVP...
And this isn't that anyone's not good.
Yeah. Everyone's
They're
great.
All brilliant.
I have De Niro... Barely edging Al Pacino.
Really?
I don't
disagree, you know.
Yeah. And you know what?
Because Pacino gets to be Pacino.
Pacino's
quite showy and loud. And but you know something? Fair or foul. Pacino's done that many times.
But this is my first time getting to see it right. At this time. And you also have to remember, in hip-hop culture, Jimmy Hoffa is a name.
Yes.
That, the disappearance.
Yeah.
All of it. Then to have Pacino play him is like from a... Growing up in the 50 Cent era and all that, that's like a serious connect. This is the first time I've ever gotten to see that story told beyond a boring documentary on YouTube.
Right.
And I really enjoyed it. Showy, confident, going up against odds that are insane.
You're going with De Niro.
But I'm going with De Niro, man. I'm sticking with De Niro because of the range, and it's...
There you go, because of the range. That's a great answer.
That's what I'm going to do. Yeah.
I'm going to give you... I'm just for the sake of argument.
You're saying Pesci for sure.
I'm saying Pesci.
Yeah.
But you know something? I'm sitting there going... I love it. You talked about Steve Carell.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when guys that you know is one way are just in a different situation. I never enjoyed... I think Ray Romano is a decent stand-up. But like Seinfeld, it's quite up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not knocking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone loves Raymond Zahn. I don't watch it. I don't do those sort of sitcoms anymore.
Yeah.
But I love him turning up in things. He used to be in this short-lived series on TNT about middle-aged guys, and it was sort of serious. And I thought he did a great job in
this.
He
really did.
Because he's hanging with some dudes no, these are Oscar-winner dudes.
And he wasn't out of place.
And he's not out of place.
Yeah.
I think Pesci, to me, was the MVP. Because if you're of an age, and you said yourself,
mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that makes this show work is that Richard and I are obviously slightly different generations,
mm-hmm.
but we both have a love for cinema. Pesci won his Oscar for, gosh, he was in Goodfellas, mm-hmm. he was in Casino, mm-hmm. he was in the Lethal Weapon movies, mm-hmm. and he always sort of played a character with a lot of tics and
mm-hmm.
and he's a real, especially in Casino, and a Goodfellas, he's a real son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. Drop dead, stone killer, mm-hmm. is the characters he mm-hmm. plays. In this one, he's very quiet.
Subtle.
And gangster, very subtle.
Yeah, calm.
And just a couple of words.
Yeah.
And it was weird. Maybe it works because you keep expecting him to do Joe Pesci and he doesn't.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt Pacino played to Pacino type.
Yeah.
That's not a criticism.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we talked about the de-aging. Obviously, because this is a movie that's told over many generations, they made a decision to go with the same actors but use the CGI technology to de-age them.
Yeah.
So there are scenes where it's Robert De Niro looking like he is now, Al Pacino looking like he is now.
Yeah.
Then there are scenes where I guess they've digitally affected them to look like they were when they were 35.
Yeah.
How did that work for you?
I liked it, and I think I'm coming from a completely different place because that's as close as I'm going to get to seeing those people act at that age without revisiting something that's already been released. And for some reason, like when I watch Goodfellas, which I've seen probably in the last 10 years, I would prefer to see the the aging element, because I'm like, this is someone in current times doing it, and I get a glimpse back at what it would have looked like had they been that age in current times, versus going back and watching an older film that's however many years old. I liked it. I thought it was done much better than the recent Will Smith movie that we covered, where they tried to do the same thing. Gemini, which he's much younger.
Sure.
And it looked kind of cartoonish from time to time. Looked good most of the time.
So on a technical level, did they get away with it?
Yeah.
I think they did.
Yeah.
And I'm very critical of CGI. Yeah. I mean, you and I have had this discussion. One of the reasons where, you know, you have a, for want of a better phrase, you're far more accepting of, because you enjoy comic book movies, but you're more accepting of them, whereas I'm far more like, yeah, but it's all a cartoon. Again, the Fast and Furious conversation. Mm-hmm. I felt that technically they pulled it off.
Absolutely.
Like, I didn't think I was watching a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you asked me in the green room before the show, Seth, what did you think of it? My answer was, I just found it a bit unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
Not because the special effect wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fine. It definitely, let me say this, it doesn't get in the way of my appreciation of the movie.
Yeah. I've heard this before. Since we had that conversation, someone this morning said the same thing.
There was something quite just a bit strange
about
it.
And we're split, because we had a quick Xbox call, and it's like two of us, 29, playing with two of our former coaches who were like mid-50s. Two of us who were 29, plus my other friend's wife, weren't bothered by it at all. Guys in the 50s, like, yeah, it was great. It was just something odd about it.
Yeah, that's how I would attention. I say exactly the same thing. There's something odd about it.
Yeah.
But it works.
Yeah,
and it makes the movie work. And to be fair, I don't think this would have been the same movie if they got, I don't care who they are, if they got other actors to play their
themselves.
I don't think it would have worked.
I agree.
It would be at that moment, I don't want to say just another gangster movie.
Yeah.
But you'd go, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, Goodfellas is better. Oh, yeah. Casino is better.
Yeah.
You know, it's still got this great energy and it tells this story.
Yeah.
But again, if they got like, hey, and a young so and so is played by Chris Hemsworth or whoever, I just don't think it would have been the same.
It's not the same. And I think that it would have created a disconnect between where the story was near the end and where the story, how they were building the story. Using, I'm going to just say Ryan Gosling as an example.
Right.
If he's playing Pacino, it's just going to be very difficult for me to go between those actors in the film. Like, Ryan Gosling is playing Al Pacino. Like, that's going to be, and it might be a great performance, but I think somewhere in my head, I would rather even potentially have an odd feeling towards the special effects versus having two completely people who are probably both stars playing one another.
Obviously, you know the Godfather movies, obviously, because you love gangster movies. Yeah. So I'm to your point there. This was an all-star cast, but this wasn't an all-star game. And what I mean by that was, this was an all-star cast where it wasn't just people coming on, being in it, and doing their thing. This wasn't an exhibition game.
Yeah, yeah.
This was an all-star cast playing the last the Super Bowl ever.
Absolutely.
If this had been a movie, let's just, for giggles, this is a movie about Jimmy Hoffa starring Al Pacino, but we're going to do his whole life, and Ryan Gosling's going to play him when he's younger. You can get away with that, because then you have two leads, and as an audience member, you're prepared for Ryan Gosling, Al Pacino. But because you've got Al Pacino and Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci, and you have all these dudes in here, this was the only way to do it.
Yeah, when you put a dream team together, the younger players sit on the bench or they're not a part of the team.
Right.
When you had Jordan, Magic, and Larry, Chris and Leitner was on the bench.
Right.
And I think in this situation, and you use a great analogy, these are all-star level players on their last great season. I don't think as a producer you can risk throwing that off by taking a chance.
Which is what it would have been.
Exactly.
To be throwing it off.
And then you start wondering, like, you know, then I think you, If they had made that decision to use young actors to play these guys, I think then the length of the movie starts to get a little weird. I think a lot of things that were overlooked and people enjoyed about it because you got to experience 4 hours with these guys all the way through this story gets a little choppy when it's going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
It becomes a whole load of war comes. Oh, so and so's in it. It's like a, it's like the first Star Wars where it's like, hey, cameo from so and so. Oh man, there's the dude who's inside.
And I don't like that in these type of films. You know, you go back in time and it's like, oh, there's Ryan Gosling. Oh, there's Christian Bale. I don't want to do this. Is not a rap video, man. This is like a real gangster film with heavy hitters who've been in, had long established careers and been in other successful films. This is their last one. This is the last championship. This is Peyton Manning with the Broncos at the end. This is, I guess, what Tom Brady is doing one of these years. You don't need a lot of young flash. Yeah. They handled it well. And I also thought that it was very impressive for them not only to use those special effects to make them look younger, but to have those guys using it in very young scenes, like when they're out on the beach, when De Niro has to do some of the fighting scenes or the combat. I appreciated the grittiness of the film. I appreciated the story, the storytelling of every angle, how it shifted from person to person.
Yeah.
I'm big on loyalty. Loyalty is a big thing back home. I appreciated how that was a huge part of what this was. Are you being loyal or not? Because I think in a lot of the modern films about gangster activity, it's more about the money and the prestige and how far you can get. This was old school. Are you loyal to this cause and are you loyal to us? I thought I think you need older actors to take us back to that time period. I can't see people my age or even up to 35 being able to really encompass what all of that is. I really enjoyed it. I would watch it again.
Right.
I've heard that they may potentially in like the next year chop it up and make it
extended
like
extended cut.
Yeah. I'm with it.
We're actually going to do this in January. So yeah. I'm not going to ask you right now. Okay, so let's move on. Irishman, well worth it if you've not seen
Absolutely.
It. Absolutely. Well Great worth film. It. And again, all-star cast, but it's not. Yeah.
No flaws for me.
Yeah. And not gimmicky, because again, I think I'm getting caught up on all-star cast being gimmicky. No, it's not gimmicky.
Not at all.
It's the real deal.
Yeah.
So we're going to switch back because we're going to come to Star Wars. You've been watching The Mandalorian.
Yes.
On Disney Plus.
Yes. Which, you know, really quick on Disney Plus, I'm surprised how many people are just going back and watching the old cartoon movies and TV shows. Great call by Disney Plus in terms.
So why aren't they binge? Why aren't they binge releasing this thing? This is another one.
Yeah, I don't.
Nobody's did Walt Disney.
I don't get it because they've made two crucial mistakes. One,
because we're gonna get to Star Wars, which is coming in days
right now, and I would love to have
Mandalorian done and dusted, and then get into Star Wars
because I don't want to go back and forth. There are three things. Actually, I said two. There are three things that are killing me. One, and I'm not gonna touch on this. I'm just gonna say it very quickly. One. They just released Avengers on Disney Plus. They made some huge mistake with how it translates through the TV. That's ridiculous. Two, Mandalorian. For those of us who do not read the Star Wars comics and books, which is a large group.
Yeah, it's the group that do a hardcore.
Exactly.
But still.
Yeah, I mean, we love the films, but I'm not buying a graphic novel.
Most Bond fans haven't read the novels.
Exactly.
That's the reality now.
You can't advertise it like it's Boba Fett when it's not. That is, without going too deep into who that character is, wears all the same armor. That's who I thought this was.
Sure.
And then three, you know, just let me binge this one. Let me. If Star Wars is coming out in less than 2 weeks, I need to have this finished before then.
Were you going to get Disney Plus regardless, or did The Mandalorian push you over the edge?
I'm going to be honest.
Push you over the edge.
I'm going to be honest with you. I was getting it for the Marvel shows coming out later.
Okay,
but The Mandalorian did seal it for me.
Okay.
I was like 80, I was like 55% on it.
So I'm getting a sense from you that The Mandalorian is probably not exceeding your expectations. And frankly, you're slightly underwhelmed.
I'll put it like this.
Knowing that a Star Wars movie is coming too.
I just don't appreciate not being able to binge watch this. Because if there were ever a show I felt like they would break their rule for, it would be this one, because everyone's going back and watching all of the Star Wars films. Let me binge watch
this. So here's my question for you then.
Yeah.
If Disney did not have Marvel, would you be considering not hanging around with Disney Plus? Because you know something?
Yeah.
This is kind of BS. On Netflix, man, I can get everything right away.
I actually would say that's true. If
Interesting.
If you were to say to me, erase from history that Disney buys Marvel. And right. Marvel's going to come out
That's
with...
That's what I'm doing.
Marvel, no Marvel Plus is coming out in
Marvel
January.
Marvel Channel has its own channel.
So Disney is literally payment. Disney stuff and The Mandalorian.
And Star Wars.
I don't...
Which, to be fair, is seven movies.
I've already
eight,
seen
nine,
them.
Nine, 10 movies.
I can watch it some other way.
Right.
I don't think I'm getting Disney Plus. But since that's not the case, I was happy that they had The Mandalorian. I just thought it was Boba Fett. And I'm a little disappointed that that wasn't clear in the beginning. When I got over that, finally, it's a good movie. I mean, it's a good good show. Special effects are very Star Wars-y. Storyline is easy enough.
And it looks like movie quality.
Oh, it is.
This doesn't look like TV show quality.
It looks better, and this is wild to say, and someone's going to get fired at Disney. Mandalorian looks better than Avengers Endgame on Disney Plus.
Interesting.
There's something went wrong
the
there. Yeah, but it feels like it could have been a movie. But if we're going back to your scenario, I don't think I get Disney Plus. If Marvel's its own entity, I don't think so. And because I would be too pissed off by this, because if someone were to say, "Hey, The Mandalorian's great, but you can't binge watch it," I'm like, "Well, tell me when it's over, and I'll start my 7-day trial then."
Obviously, you know, Star Wars is coming and we're going to get to that shortly, but obviously because these are related. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a mistake to have Mandalorian out this close to Star Wars? Do you think they should have, considering that after this Star Wars movie, there isn't another one about, there's nothing else in production.
Yeah.
Do you think they would have been better off waiting until next September and giving Star Wars fans a Mandalorian?
Or spring into summer. So like you said, next year or something like that.
Mandalorian's been up like 2 weeks, I think. Two or 3 weeks by the time this show comes out. We're looking towards early November, but I was saying when it came out.
And,
the Star Wars movie is here before Christmas. No one needs to get their appetite whetted for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I would have waited.
The show's coming. Remember, Star Wars is coming. No, we know Star Wars is coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
You think they messed up that?
I do. And I don't know how to explain this because there are some people, I discussed this lightly with one person in the green room before I was here. They are not blown, they don't have an issue with not being able to binge watch it. But to your point, everyone knows that Star Wars is coming out the 19th or 20th, depending on where you get your ticket.
Right.
I needed nothing to carry me to that moment.
Right.
You know when the Star Wars film comes out, the next one's coming out in 2 to 3 years.
Right.
That's the rotation. We're good on that. I actually think, to your point, you let Star Wars come out because you're not going to allow people to binge watch The Mandalorian. So you let Star Wars, the movie, come out. It's going to do $1 billion. No big deal. When it finally dies down, I'm advertising The Mandalorian in the trailers.
April.
Next
I'm putting
Mandalorian. Boom.
Interesting.
And you release Mandalorian around the time that all of the Marvel things are coming out. Because then I think if you do it that way, after Star Wars,
my properties are feeding each other.
Oh, my goodness.
I think I'm going to stop there. One interesting thing.
Yeah, I don't like the idea that I don't think I'm going to be finished with The Mandalorian by the time that Star Wars comes out.
Right.
Which is weird. It just feels
that strange. Is odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is my point here. And this comes back to our central point of being unable to binge watch things. Yeah. The Irishman is a long movie.
Yeah.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was a long movie.
Yeah.
I could live with that.
Yeah.
Ford versus Ferrari was 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
I was fine with that.
Yeah. Watch it again.
Mandalorian, when it's finished, is going to be, what did you say, if they do like 10 episodes and they're half an hour? It could be 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
What, so you're gonna ask me to invest 3 months to watch this?
Yeah, and I think...
Not when I can do everything else. That's the thing. I can do everything else now.
I think that Disney and Apple made a huge mistake trying to protect their money. And from a business standpoint, if you are worried in this day and age about losing subscriptions and people binge watching your show and then not having the payment come through, you're in the wrong field.
You need content.
Yeah, you need content.
And otherwise, don't stream.
And also, if people are speeding through your stuff, they're going to tell other people, yeah, dude, I had to watch all of the episodes in 5 days.
CBS has like 3 different Star Trek series, and you can go back and watch the old ones, and you got plenty there.
Yeah, you can watch them on CBS All Access, which I didn't even know existed.
You can go and watch the
commercials suck, but you can go right on and watch. I would much rather have a commercial and be able to watch The Mandalorian versus, you know, is it coming out? And then this is something that killed me with Apple.
Because if you're not hooked,
then
suddenly, again, and I want to give you an example here. Yeah. I like The Expanse, the TV show, when it was on Sci-Fi Channel. Mm-hmm. And now it's moved to Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm ready to watch it on Amazon because I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But even the other day, I got confused going, is it out yet? Have I missed it?
Yeah.
Shoot, can someone remind me? If you're not... I think when something is streaming,
yeah,
you've got to give it to everyone.
Yeah.
Because unlike tuning in on Monday night to watch 24, you're not conditioned that way with streaming.
I agree.
Whereas regular TV, I mean, again, HBO can get away with it. Because everyone knows HBO Sunday night at 9 o'clock, you're going to get one of nine shows that are turning out there. And so you, the viewer, know Sunday's at 9, I'm watching HBO.
Yeah. But I don't like it, man.
No one is sitting here going, oh, yeah, Wednesday night is my Amazon Prime night. No one does that.
No one's doing it. And then, like you said, if you're not hooked, it's easy to forget.
You sign out. You lose it.
And I'm going to tell you something else that I thought was a big risk with both of these streaming services, with the influx of people they had coming in, even though the numbers are questionable. I go to go watch The Mandalorian, I believe it was, maybe the third episode, one of the episodes, the app crashed. So now I've waited to whatever day the app crashed.
You can't do that.
And I'm like, if I would have been able to binge it, if I'd already watched six episodes and I go on an app crash, I'm like, all right, I can wait because I've seen
it. I get it.
I'm not waiting until I'm just going to throw a day up Friday. And it's like, okay, it's finally Friday. I got off work. I'm not going to go see a movie today because I'm going to watch The Mandalorian. Oh, the app is down for 4 to 6 hours, depending on where you are.
So is it fair to say, for a variety of different reasons?
Yeah.
Mandalorian right now, it's still in the game, but you know, you're running out of time, and this could turn into a 21-point loss if you're not.
Yeah, they need to figure that out.
Interesting.
They need to make some big decisions there for sure.
Star Wars is coming, though. We've got to it. Rise of the Skywalker.
Yes.
Are you excited? Where are you with all of this on Star Wars? This is apparently this is the last of nine.
Yeah.
With basically this set of characters, the Skywalker family.
Yeah, you know.
The last of nine, they've had lots of projects that people have been attached to and not doing. Mm-hmm. And but when this is done, there is nothing else in the pipe. There's no Han Solo 2 or Rogue 2 or anything like that.
No Darth Maul.
This could be it for a while, other than The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
So are you ready for this? Where are you with all of this coming?
I'm excited. I'm excited. But, you know, I'm in an interesting place with Star Wars where...
Where are you as a Star Wars fan?
I'm extremely excited it's coming out. I'm definitely going to go see it. But I'm in that same place I was at the end of Lord of the Rings where I'm excited for a break from it. I think it needs some time to reinvent itself. I think we need a good 5 or 6 years away from it. It feels like it's become more of a habit versus truly being excited to see what the film is going to be about, because it's an event now. It's been an event almost my entire life. When I was younger and I was a kid, it was like, I want to see Star Wars. I want to see where the story's going. I want to see what the special effects are going to be. Now it's more like, I really want to go see it. It's going to be an event. It's going to be a lot of people. You can invite friends out to go see it. I know the special effects are going to be great.
Yep.
I know the Force is going to be there. I know the lead's going to be solid. I know Kylo Ren's going to be solid. I have an idea of what it's going to play out like. At least I have predictions coming soon. But I don't have that feeling like I did in comparison to like Avengers Endgame, which was the last one for a while.
Right.
It wasn't like, man, I can't wait to see how they end this. It's more like, man, been a good run.
Yeah, it's going
to
be the last one for a while.
Last one for a while. You know, and it's Disney, so I know it's not the last one.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, well, we're finally putting this to rest. Hope it lives up to the hype. I'll go see it. Excited to see it. Going to go see it in whatever they have, IMAX. Maybe, probably not 3D. I'm up for it. I'm going to still try to get the advance ticket so I'm not in there with the 300 people. But it's even if I am, it's cool to see the kids dress up and people binge watching it. But it's become more of an experience from that perspective than I'm excited for the movie itself.
I'm going to ask you at the end of the show, we're going to have some fun, and I'm actually going to ask Richard to predict how the Star Wars saga ends, and I'm going to ask him about what happens to this character, what happens to that character. He's going to put it out there, and then in January we're going to come back and grade him. So let me ask this question, though, on a more, you know, more in line of the last couple of minutes of discussion. Are you nervous at all, or what are your fears? For example, so you just mentioned the last Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. You wanted to see how it ended up. Now, sure, at that moment, you might have been worried that they might not do this right or they might do that wrong. Is there anything that concerns you about this last Star Wars movie. Are you worried that there could be some mistakes that they make and you're hoping they don't make them?
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm...
Because Solo wasn't well received.
I didn't like it.
The last movie, what was the last one called? Last Jedi.
Yeah, Return of Jedi.
I'm not a super geek fan, but I know it seemed to, there was a vocal part of the fan base that didn't like it. I just didn't like it as a movie, full stop.
Got a little cheesy.
I did feel that the one before Force Awakens was kind of just a remake of the early one.
Yeah.
So while I enjoyed it a lot, I didn't feel, I felt for a little while with these movies, we don't really seem to be going anywhere.
Yeah.
And we're not, or if we are, we're just kind of going anywhere, but you know, I don't know, it all seems vaguely familiar. What are some of your, do you have any fears?
Yeah, well, I'm going to say this to kind of add to your point. First, I feel like I've gotten to a place with Star Wars that I never would have imagined as a kid where it's a great B film. Like, I have come to this point where I'm like, everything you just said about the last few Star Wars films is spot on. Were they horrible?
Because I know from talking to you, when you talk about Avengers, whether you agree or disagree, you're passionate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you are about Deadpool. Yeah, I absolutely. I always like the first one, but you have a strong opinion.
Yeah.
I know when I know in the new year we're going to talk James Bond, I'm going to have strong opinions.
Yeah.
You were the same way. Black Panther, I feel strongly about this. Yeah. Not so Spider-Man.
I don't have that passion for Star Wars anymore because the last few...
I'm the same way.
Yeah, just been.
I see the trailers and I go,
okay. I'm gonna go see it. Like you just go, okay. I'm gonna go see it.
I feel like I need to go and see it to go and see it.
Exactly.
So that I'm not the dude that hasn't
gone to go see it. And it's like the we've both coached. It's like the really good B player that's really solid, completes a lot of passes, you know, misses shots but puts them on frame, and you go, well, that was a good game. Now they haven't scored. They haven't had an assist. But yeah, that's a solid player. As to where when they were a freshman, you were like, oh, man, this is going to be a player I can build around. I've lost that passion for it. It's an event. I don't want to be the one guy on social media who hasn't seen it. This will be one of the few things on social media. I'll post and say, oh, I'm in here. Look at me. It's cool. But yeah.
Take your sports analogy about a B player.
Yeah.
If you're coaching a B player and that B player gets hurt, you can replace him with another B player.
Exactly.
Whereas your A player.
Exactly.
And if LeBron goes down, what am I going to do?
Not in the playoffs.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where I am. If it's great, awesome. Because then I can go, oh, man, they finish it the right way. But I'm going to tell you something strange because Disney produces both. I think Avengers is going to hurt this film because they closed and concluded that part of that series so perfectly that a lot of my friends who are Star Wars fans are Marvel fans. And they have those expectations for this film. And what they're saying to me is, hey, no, Richard, the last two were solid. Rogue One was solid. Some of them liked Solo. I thought it was horrible. But they're like, this is going to be the one that is going to solidify that Star Wars never left. They used those last few films to build up for this moment. And it's going to be an all-time great film. And I'm like, I don't know.
I'm, again, and I've said this many, many times, I'm not a comic book guy, but I do acknowledge this notion that Avengers did what it did and it did it really well.
The last one.
Let us be very upfront. Yeah. Avengers buried X-Men.
Yeah.
And I'm just talking about it on a creative level.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last X-Men movie bombed and it wasn't very interesting because, again, it doesn't match up to the Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, we will talk in a later show about the new James Bond film that's going to come out in the spring with Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
The one thing that James Bond's got going for it is... Well, it's not a comic book movie, so it's not a comparison.
Exactly.
Batman, Superman, Suicide Squad, they are all running up against this. Avengers has done it so well that it makes... And unfortunately, Star Wars has decided to play in that yard instead of James Bond that goes and plays in its own.
Yeah.
Star Wars has decided in a strange way by running this sort of long concoction of movies and they're all kind of joined.
Now they get compared.
Well, then you get compared fair or foul with Avengers, which has done it so well.
And I'm telling you, that is the word around town for people who are heavy into both. This is going to be the Avengers Endgame of Star Wars. And I'm telling
you, that's a big ask.
That's a huge ask.
Because I know dudes who didn't even watch the Avengers movies and go, oh, Endgame, you know, that's a great movie,
it's
man.
It's a great
and
film, they, man.
I didn't quite understand what happened with so-and-so.
Yeah, but everyone else got exactly, it. Exactly, exactly.
Oh, that's a tough ask.
I don't see. I would be happy if it happened, but you're Avengers Endgame, like you said, it can take someone who's never watched any of them and go, yeah, that was a good film. Like, I don't know who Spider-Guy is, but they handle that well. I do not see myself walking into this film and leaving this film thinking, from the very beginning to the very end, not only did they fix any of the fallacies and voids from the last films, it was entertainment with a great story all the way through. All of the acting was spot on, and all of the people and production, actors and special effects stepped up to the moment for 2 hours. I don't see it for Star Wars.
So I'm going to ask this of you now. And Richard and I are going to go slightly away from the normal, hey, this movie was good and this performance was good, and which is what normally happens on this show. So Disney spent a ton of cash buying Star Wars, lock, stock, and barrel. Since they've owned it, they've put out 3 movies with the original characters, some sort of relation to the, like, sort of related to the original Star Wars story.
Yeah.
They've done 2 spin-off movies with, Sure, Solo is a spin-off movie because it's kind of a prequel. And Rogue One is a prequel story with entirely new characters. A couple of people show up, but no one of note. And now we have Mandalorian on Disney Plus. Grade Disney on their ownership of Star Wars. Again, we've not seen this movie yet.
Yeah.
But still, we've had four other movies in a TV series. Grade Disney so far on their guardianship of Star Wars.
B minus, and I'm being really, really nice.
Yeah, well, as soon as you said B minus, I was going to say, ooh, you're being generous.
I'm being really generous because what I'm doing with this
Tell me why they get that B. Why did I get the B minus?
Because it's like, and we're both educators in our own right, what I'm doing is, I'm giving the Star Wars films, not the spinoffs, higher grading weight. So the last 2 Star Wars films, not Rogue One and not Solo, I'm going to give those both B and B minus. I'm going to say those were the big tests for the quarter. And I'm going to say Solo, that was an F, was a pop quiz. And I'm going to give Rogue One, I'm going to bump that guy up to a B. Because of the last 10 minutes with Darth Vader, and I really appreciated that. I love that. I don't know why Darth Vader doesn't get his own movie. Everybody else does with Darth Vader.
Because he's had his own series.
I want to start it over. Movies. I want to know everything about him. I want to know this guy in and out, Darth Maul 2. But I just, and I'm being nice, because what I thought is not what I said. I said B, but what I thought I will, maybe a grade or so down, depending on where you are in the country and the grading scale. But I'll put it like this. No one right now, quick comparison, no one right now is going, man, now that Endgame's over, I'm cool. I don't need to see any more Marvel. I am there with Star Wars. I'm like, okay, after this one, let's take a good 5 to 10 years and come back. I want to see this with my kids in 10 years. I don't need anything else right now.
All right.
Yeah,
B minus. I think you're being generous.
I am.
And I think it's a B minus, frankly. I'm always going to say this. It's a B minus saved by Rogue One.
I think if you remove
Rogue One, you're suddenly looking at a C plus.
Yeah, you're looking at a C minus.
I think Rogue One is real strong
because
it doesn't have too much of the baggage. Yeah. You can make an argument
that Rogue One's actually the best one they've had recently.
People claim that George Lucas has said, that is my favorite other Star, including his 3 own Clone Wars, the other one, whatever the other 2 were with Darth. He goes, he's like, no, because he said he likes Rogue One because he said it feels like the very first movie. There's something quite fresh and about it. Okay, so that's the great. If I had some music, I'd play some music. I'm going to hit Richard with some really quick questions here. So you have to give me quick answers. You don't get to go on for 20 minutes. All right. So what's this one? Last Skywalker.
Skywalker.
New Skywalker.
Yeah.
Okay. So Richard, are you ready for your pop quiz predictions?
Absolutely.
And we're going to judge you on these predictions January.
Please hold me to it.
Do any major characters die at the end of this movie?
Yes.
Do you want a bonus point? Who does? Throw me a name. Just the actor or the character?
Rey's character dies after falling in love with Kylo Ren.
All right, there's your question.
She's
out
of there.
Kylo Ren, he's the lead villain. Does he become a good guy?
No, but he convinces Rey to become a bad guy.
Oh, okay.
And they fall for each other.
Okay, there's your prediction. Yeah, okay, will the Death Star be in it?
Hopefully. Hopefully, because I'm giving it an A.
I'm one of those, I hope not. I want it in there. The last scenes of the movie are blow up the Death Star.
Yeah, I have a funny joke I want to tell at the end. But I hope so, because I love that about Rogue One.
Will there be any new cute animals? Like in
Baby Yoda's only thing saving Mandalorian. Baby Yoda's holding Disney Plus together right now.
Yeah. The Emperor's going to be in this one. Are we going to get some heavy Darth Vader flashbacks?
Yes. Yes, I think so. I think they're going to explain that the I always forget his name, the big guy that's really ugly is, I think we're going to find out he is Darth Vader. Yeah.
Two more questions.
Yeah.
Will this one climax with a big space fighter rocket X-Wings battle?
I think it'll...
Climax. Not start of the movie, not middle of the movie. The big finish. Mm. Is the big finish going to be a big space battle?
I'm going to say... No. I'm going to say it's going to be two people. I'm going to say that's going to be the scene prior. It's going to climax with lightsabers.
Lightsaber duel. So you're going with lightsaber duel.
Yeah, bridge. Okay. Like you're going with lightsaber duel
as the big finish, not X-Wing battle.
Yeah, okay. And I'm kind of disappointed to say that.
Okay, I know. I'm with you too, man. I want Star Wars. I don't want two dudes having a row. Okay, so final question. So the last major character, the last prequel character returning is going to be Billy Dee Williams as Lando. Lando Calrissian, is he the original owner of the Millennium Falcon, or did he steal whatever? But Billy Dee Williams, I'm in this seriously now, and this isn't a reflection of how one feels about Billy Dee Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to get it right bringing this character back? Because I think I'm going to say this now before I have you answer this question. This is a semi-serious question at the end of your predictions.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got Han Solo right when he came back. It was perfect.
Yeah. Agreed.
I think Leia has been okay, but I was never that wedded to her as a character in the first place.
Agreed.
Because when I first
100%.
Saw Star Wars, I was a young dude.
Yeah.
I was a teenage boy, so I was interested in the guy characters.
Absolutely.
I think they really made a hash, nothing to do with Mark Hamill.
Luke Skywalker
came back in the last movie, and then he disappears for half the movie, and we didn't. I don't know. I felt like, wait, this is it with Luke Skywalker? Are they going to get it right with Lando? Or is it just going to be, hey, Billy Dee Williams is in the movie?
Yeah, hey, Billy Dee Williams is in the movie. I'm going to say no. I'm going to go no.
Going to say no.
A part of me wants to say maybe, but I'm just going to go no.
Okay.
I'm going to go no on that one.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, so we've come to the end of Richard's Star Wars predictions. I'm going to write down, when I listen back to the show, I'm going to write these down. Yeah. We are going to grade him in January.
I just want to say there's a really funny meme that everyone has to see, and it's referencing Star Wars. And I'm not going to get into what they're getting into politically, but it's hilarious. And it's a debate with a bunch of political figures. I'm not going to say any names. And there's Darth Vader. And he's in the middle. And he has his hand up with his mask on. And he says, but the Death Star is going to bring us millions and millions of jobs. And if you can find that meme, it is hilarious. And it says, but I promise the Death Star is going to bring us millions and millions of jobs.
May I'm going to leave it there. Force be with you.
Yeah, I'm going to leave. It's hilarious. Please find that meme. Death Star, political Darth Vader meme. Hilarious.
All right, we'll look for that. We'll be back in January where we're going to start making, because all the movies will be in and be ready, getting teed up for Oscars. So we're going to make some, we're going to start pooling together who we think should be up for Oscars. We're also going to take a look. We didn't do it this month, but we're going to spend a bit more time because January is slower.
Yeah.
The new James Bond movie trailer dropped this week, so we're going to come back.
That will be Zeph's show, by the way.
We liked Ford versus Ferrari. Yes. We're ambivalent about The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
If you like The Irishman, you cannot go wrong with that.
Yes.
And Star Wars, my man has made his predictions.
Yeah.
Richard, say season's greetings to your fans.
I appreciate all of the support. I'm so blessed to be at this part of my life. Thank you for everyone who's listening. Watch the morning show. And huge shout out to Anthony Joshua for bringing the belts back to England. They wrote you off. It's not your fault that man came in that ring 15 pounds over. Wait, jab, and let's go home.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
This has been Movie Richard's Movie Month, a production of the Atlantic Voice Network. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice, via email at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com, and on the blog at AtlanticVoice.net. Movie Richard's Movie Month.